This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
What are you, sir? What are you, ma'am? What am I doing to make finance pivot capitalism towards sustainability in the next 5 years?
There's a nearly constant scroll of bad news passing before our eyes, from rampant income inequality and raging wildfires, to climate devastation and white nationalists in the Oval Office. Somehow, though, the stock market just keeps chugging along. Corporate profits are up, so in the eyes of the average news consumer, the economy is strong. But what factors are we missing in this declaration of strength? This week on Sea Change Radio, we discuss the state of the financial services industry with Graham Sinclair, who's worked in the field for over a decade. He helps people who are hell-bent on maximizing profits start to take other things into account, like social justice and the environment. Sinclair tells us what resonates with these financial services professionals, what trends he sees in the industry, and what gives him hope about it moving forward. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Graham Sinclair. Graham's an investment professional, and he is an ESG architect. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. Graham, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thank you so much for having me on. I've been a big fan of the show over the last 8 years, and it's great to be here today. Thanks for having me.
So ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. What does that mean for our listeners?
Alex, the best way to think about it is it's sustainability in investment. And sustainability is a huge subject area. And what we have developed as the most useful framing for investment, and we all know investment has tons of jargon and abbreviations and acronyms, it's settled on using ESG, Environment, Social, Governance, as the terminology that most made sense. An interesting backstory, it kind of flipped over in the late 2000s, around 2008, 2009, that a lot of the professionals who had originally, some of this was founded in ethical investing, you know, for centuries, developed into socially responsible investing as the key phrasing around the 70s, 80s, 90s, and then into this new century, as the theme developed, as new techniques evolved, as new issues got covered. That's when it felt, look, we really need some new language to help explain it. And that's when ESG became the de facto terminology for this, at least in the investment space. And you even now see it bleeding over across to companies and institutions and rating agencies.
And so when you make presentations to conferences or financial professionals, maybe set the tone of the room usually. Are these people who are already embracing the realities of climate change and trying to incorporate this into their day-to-day lives, or do you have a more cynical audience generally?
Well, I've presented, you know, on many continents, many different fora, most recently in Europe to management executives in the finance sector. I've worked with a whole range. Sometimes, frankly, the most intimidating can be a board of pension fund trustees, you know, 12 people around a huge mahogany table who are looking to drill down on particular issues and quiz you really from the first sentence or two that you offer up. In finance sector conferences situations, you're always going to get during Q&A, you're going to get some really basic questions that you feel you've kind of covered in your prepared comments. But what I've noticed, you know, I've been in the space running my own shop since the end of 2006. I've been in the pensions and investment industry since 1994. You've definitely noticed a maturation of the issues around sustainability, issues of environment, social, governance factors. So some audiences, you know, even within a room, you're going to have some people who are not even on board. They still see the world maybe through their political lens, maybe you know, they're all about Milton Friedman and, you know, 1970, all the way forward to, and sometimes, yes, this track to the millennial, the person who's had the personal experience in a particular situation. And they're saying, well, you know, it's interesting what you're saying, but take us right to the cutting edge. Where's the new best practice coming from today and will come from tomorrow? So it really can be a huge range. Some of the best situations I have is when I'm faced with critics or skeptics or people who are putting up those counterpoints. It's always harder to work with people who give you no reaction. They're kind of like the silent majority or the big blob in the middle, and you're not really sure what they're saying.
One of your main tenets is to try to make people aware of the externalities that go into their businesses and what you call switching from like a shareholder model to a stakeholder model. When you're talking to somebody who's made a lot of money, who might be the CFO, let's say, of a big company, and has their MBA, and basically all of their success is built upon the idea of maximizing shareholder value, how do you kind of crack that nut? That's a difficult bedrock to try to shake.
Absolutely, and you know, and that's very difficult. And different depending on, you know, if I'm speaking in Istanbul or Geneva or Johannesburg or Boston, or, you know, it really depends what is the culture of the audience, how open are they to thinking, how willing are they to test some of the underlying investment beliefs that they have. So my first client was AIG Global Investors. It's in the public domain. It was end of 2006. Backstory, Hank Greenberg faced proxy action. Proxy action is typical, the shareholder advocacy by ESG investors, where they say, why is your company doing A, B, and C? And you have the tool in developed market capitalist systems with listed companies that you can lobby the other shareholders at the annual meeting to have the executives go and investigate something. Hank Greenberg was driven in 2005 because of action in the course of 2006 through 2008 to develop a plan of action to figure out sustainability at AIG, which, you know, this unfortunately coincided with the huge meltdown. Nevertheless, AIG Global Investors at the time, depending on how you counted the assets, they had between $750 billion to maybe up to $1 trillion if you looked across cash and other asset classes. And here was a very, you know, a major brand, a global brand at the time. Again, this is before 200 people in their financial products team blew it up. And here we had, I was sitting with the head of the equities, who was very antagonistic at the start of the project. Like really, you know, almost ad hominem attacks. Like, where's this guy coming from? Whose idea was this project? Why do I even have to be at this meeting? And fast forward, within a year, that individual was one of the people most fast forward on the project. Another colleague who was in the private equity space for that project team, fast forward another 3 to 4 years, they actually start to specialize and reference ESG in pretty much all their work. And a third example from that particular project, my first project, so it's always close to my heart, dealing with a fixed income analyst who said, you know what, this is so interesting, Graham, I don't recognize the words that you're using, I don't recognize the lexicon, the language that you're using here, but of course I want to see my money again. Of course, every time I analyze who we, as one of the most responsible or most dedicated institutional investment houses, how are we going to lend that money in our fixed income portfolio? Well, I need to dig deep to see if this company is still going to be around, if this municipality is going to be paying back for the fixed income instruments that we own. So I've had some great experiences in my project work where even the toughest opponents up front will come back or come around, and you've got to find that middle ground. You've got to both see what they're saying and try and see behind what they're saying. And it starts with the investment beliefs. That's why CalPERS, the largest retirement plan in the U.S., based in California, Sacramento, California, over $290 billion in 2017. When they reconfigured their whole investment philosophy, they actually started with investment beliefs. And this is where, if you're doing sustainability and investment right, you actually go back and check on your beliefs. How do you believe the world works? How do you believe investment philosophies can get acted upon? And you start there.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to Graham Sinclair. He's an investment professional. He can be found on Twitter at ESG Architect. So Graham, we're talking about shifting mindsets from a shareholder model to a stakeholder model. When we have a U.S. president getting a lot of airtime and pointing to high corporate profits and high Dow Jones average that reflects those profits. And then the media kind of echoes that and doesn't challenge that, his assertion that the economy is healthy, everything's great because corporate profits are up. Doesn't that make it even more challenging for somebody like yourself to try to penetrate into the mindset of some of these decision makers at these big financial services companies? How much is the current situation in the White House setting things back for you?
There's a great debate that I'm having with colleagues in the sustainable investment space, which is Donald Trump good or bad for ESG? And there's arguments on both sides. We've definitely seen in this space since November 2016 much more engagement from companies, portfolio companies, and from institutional investors on issues around environmental, social, and governance issues. You used a good word at the top of the interview when you spoke about externalities. And adopting a sustainability mindset in your investments is effectively correcting an error in economics 101. I don't know if you recall being taught this, but something that always stuck with me from my very first year at university was being taught in economics about externalities. Now, to be clear, externalities can be positive as much as they can be negative.
Why don't you give us an example of an externality for somebody who may not be familiar with the term?
Sure, I'll give you a positive and a negative. So you could argue that a positive externality is living next to a lovely green park in your neighborhood. The trees, a tree gives you equivalent of two air conditioners worth of air cooling in an urban environment, or a great place to recreate or play with your kid. That's a positive externality. You don't pay every time you walk through the doors of that park. There's effectively, you can do an economic cost benefit analysis on what is a park worth. A negative externality is the classic of an industrial facility and a manufacturing operation that takes in water from a river or water source, uses it in its processes, and then pumps out that effluent without treating it. So it takes in cleaner water, puts out dirtier water. That's your classic kind of economics 101 on what's an externality. Now, there's all kinds of externalities at different points in a business or manufacturing operation. But the classic thinking that sustainability brings, and one of the themes that has been explored, is around a circular economy, which is not a linear economy. You don't take stuff, process it, and then dump it. You're trying to always get it to flow back through that same economy. Think enhanced recycling, if you will. And how it would work in a sustainability mindset would be that factory would take in water from the available natural resource. They would use it in their processing. They would use as little water as possible. And when they return that water to the natural ecosystem from which they benefited, they would return that water as good as or better than the water that came into the factory. And one quick way to do this, if you had to draw yourself a little doodle on the back of a napkin, is you put the in-source pipe for that factory downriver from the outsource pipe of that factory. That would be a classic way of making sure a company operating for its own profit, trying to make widgets to sell to paying customers, is not taking more from the natural ecosystem than they're putting back. That would be kind of a classic explanation of externalities.
So there's been movements from a macroeconomic viewpoint, academically and in terms of data for policy, to stop focusing so much on GDP from governments, to focus more on the global happiness index. It sounds like you're kind of espousing something similar, a similar transition within companies. Is that fair to say? And I guess what would be the equivalent of like a global happiness index? How does a CFO start accounting, even though it may not be the focus of this company, may not be as shareholder driven as it used to be? They still have shareholders and they still want profits. How does that financial services professional come to the people who he's accountable to and say, we should be taking into account a lot of other information than just profit and loss?
So there's a lot of ways to go at that very good question, Alex. So think of it fundamentally, the way I describe sustainability in investment. What is the investment case for sustainability? Sustainability is the meta strategy that throws shade on every other strategy that a business is trying to develop. Sustainability and integrating proactively, explicitly integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment decisions, whether you're the CFO or the chief investment officer on a portfolio, investing in a range of portfolio companies. It's about adopting a stakeholder view that says there's more than one data point here that I need to be tracking, I need to have on my dashboard as I come to make my investment decisions. Investment decisions are always forward-looking, not backward-looking. Your balance sheet and your income statement always tell you what happened behind your car. They're always looking in the rearview mirror. An investor at any point in time has to weigh up a range of opportunities, choices, and then make the decision, in some ways forecasting, in some ways guessing, in some ways hopefully being lucky about where the money is going to be made going forward. What sustainability is doing, firstly, is just making sure that everything that matters gets included. So unfortunately, pretty often modern economies have been allowed to run without fully costing for all the costs and the benefits. This is something of the Chinese position, if you will, where they've set aside the environmental costs of making their great leap forward, pulling hundreds of millions of people, of their citizens, out of poverty as they rushed through and basically consumed a lot of the environmental ecosystem around them. And now they're having to quickly kind of upgrade and move forward. And this is the path of industrialization. Many countries, many economies have had to do this. At a portfolio company level, what you're doing as an investor is you're saying to the portfolio company, absolutely, the investment returns will be measured on the flow of cash. Are you making customers happy? Are you doing it at a profit? Are you looking after your talent inside the shop? Are you making sure you comply with all the rules and regulations of all the territories that you operate in, so you're not doing anything illegal, you won't get punished? Right? There's many, many ways for a company to lose money or to be punished. So fundamentally, by adopting a stakeholder approach, you're taking a much broader 360-degree review of all the matrix of stakeholders that sit around a company. So you don't suddenly get a surprise when a regulator nails you with a $100 million fine because, oh, you were cheating over here and filling your forms, or you were abusing a relationship with a poor community who spoke a different language, or you weren't reaching out to them properly, or you're making widgets that were unsafe and you hid the fact that they were unsafe, or in the case of VW Dieselgate, you cheated on your emissions tests and now, you know, here's your fine, and it's going to be in the billions of dollars. So fundamentally, the stakeholder approach says there's much more data that we should have on our dashboard as we come to make our decision here. Don't just tell me how many dollars and cents you pushed through the top of the bottom line in a given period or you hope to in future. The sustainability mindset says, well, let's look at the whole relationship, all the relationships that intersect through this going concern, and let's make sure we've covered all the bases. Now, there's some art and some science in doing this well, and you know, this is why I come to use the architect moniker. As an ESG architect, you've got to help filter what are going to be material issues and what are going to be less material issues. Maybe you have to figure out some of the timing, the efficiency and effectiveness with which you track these multiple data points, because sometimes you might actually have to develop ways of tracking things that historically you didn't use to track. Quick example, beer companies, wine companies, Coca-Cola itself with their soda businesses, 10 years ago, they did not know how many liters or gallons of water it took to make one widget of Coca-Cola or SAB Miller beer and so on. Now they do. So some of this, you have to actually develop the new metrics so that you can go ahead and track them. So yes, the money is important, but it's how you make the money coherently, consistently over time. That's what the sustainability mindset looks to bring.
Walking and counting on my bucks, a man with a gun said, hands up. I tried to get away, but too slow. He cocked me and took all of my dough. I heard him shout as he cut out. You ain't lost nothing, what you crying about? You're cashing nothing but trash. You're cashing nothing but trash. Trash. And he took my watch and I passed out. I woke up in the arms of a big cop. Police station, a next stop. The judge swung his fist down. Plunk, plunk. $20 fine.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Graham Sinclair, who's an investment professional. He's an ESG architect. So, Graham, you often talk about how exchanges are facing a revolution. Why don't you explain what you think that ultimately means for long-term accountability and whether you think it's going to lead to more transparency, or is it going to be more of like two different faces from a company? Are they going to be having their... Will it lead to just more greenwashing while they do more kind of off-exchange work? Maybe talk about the role of dark pools in our trading industry.
Sure. Well, it's quite timely on account of Elon Musk and his 420 funding secured tweets that's got him in all kinds of hot water. It's important to reflect on, you know, what is the role of a securities exchange? Typically, that's going to be portfolio companies who listed their other securities that you would list on the exchange. We've noticed trends since the 90s that literally the number of companies that are listed on exchanges globally, while it's grown in geography, it's actually reduced in overall count. There are fewer portfolio companies that are available to buy their securities globally than there were in the 90s, which is an unusual trend. That trend will probably continue. The number of initial public offerings, companies coming to public markets to be listed on NASDAQ or NYSE or similar exchanges around the world, are watched very closely. And the pipeline is not as good as it once was. There are pros and cons for being listed. Some of the pros are it should reduce the cost of raising capital, which is why companies look to come to market. It presents liquidity events for people who've been with the company since it started, and it also creates a diversity of investors who could be part of the success of a particular company. So exchanges have a very important role. In the sustainability investment thinking, they have a strategic role, and exchanges have the power. They're effectively a de facto regulator. Exchanges have the power to set the terms for how you list on the exchange. So the NYSE can have a certain requirement, NASDAQ and so on will have different requirements. And one thing that sustainability professionals are looking to do is raise the floor of those requirements by getting environment, social, and governance factors to be reported on as well as every other important material strategic factor for a company on a regular basis. So in September 2015, the World Federation of Exchanges, the industry body for pretty much all the exchanges around the world, came together and agreed on 33 key performance indicators that all they would encourage all their member exchanges to have their companies that list on those exchanges go ahead and report on. And some of these are really, really basic, Alex. Initially, it seemed like a pretty exciting development, and some great people like Evan Harvey at NASDAQ have done work on this for years. But a lot of it is really basic, simple stuff like, do you have a human resources policy and what is the URL for that? Some of this is really basic, so it should have been completely uncontroversial. Unfortunately, it took 2 years to develop because of pushback. But the role of exchanges and their ability to require their listed companies to report on key factors is an important strategic tool that any investor, whether they invest with explicitly integrating ESG factors or not, will want to know more about the companies they invest in. And so having those companies report key environment, social governance, performance on a regular basis makes a whole lot of sense.
So looking forward to the rest of the year and beyond, Graham, what are some of the new developments in the investment world that give you hope?
Alex, I don't know about you, but things can look pretty bleak, but there's a lot of good things happening, and it's important to kind of point to the hope. And what can one human do? And my challenge to people in the investment profession and in the finance sector is to ask yourselves the question, what can you do in your job, whatever your job title is, whoever you report to, whatever project team, whatever business unit you're operating in, what are you doing about making sure everything you do in investment and in finance is making the world better, not worse, because of the job that you're doing? How are these investment professionals, how are these finance professionals making decisions in their day job that makes the planet a better place? And it could be a simple thing like saying, well, let's issue green bonds, right? We're going to issue bonds anyway. Let's issue bonds that explicitly target fighting climate change or offering greener opportunities. When it comes to deciding on where we're going to deploy our assets, well, let's look at the diversity policy. How many women are on the board? How are they tracking the advance of people of color or differences in culture and community and background? How are we tracking them through our management and talent development process? So I think there's a lot of hope. And one of the big items that began the year for us in January at Davos was the CEO of BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager by assets under management, when he spoke about purpose. He issued a letter to all his portfolio companies that basically set the course. And he was excoriated by many of the Wall Street commenters. He was on CNBC at Davos, and he kind of had to bob and weave to handle some of the questions. But fundamentally, he stuck with it. And as companies like BlackRock and other major institutional investors are leading the way on really doing simple things. At one level, it's just simple things like keeping the receipts, checking that what a company says they're doing, they're actually doing. But importantly, saying, what is the purpose of the assets or the finances that we deploy, and to whose benefit are they being deployed? So I see a lot of hope in 2018, whatever the political climate, the economic climate, but it does come down to the humans at the end of the day. What are you, sir? What are you, ma'am? What am I doing to make finance pivot capitalism towards sustainability in the next 5 years?
Graham Sinclair, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alex. Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Samand, The Maytones, and The Clovers.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.